The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 19, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, The Elusive Emerald. Episode 2, The Affair of the White Cockerel. The radio programs appearing in this audiobook were written by Dennis Green, Bruce Taylor, and Anthony Boucher, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels, featuring narration by Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Harry Bartell.
Cremel Hair Tonic and Cremel Shampoo present the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson and Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes. Once again, it's time to keep that witty appointment with our good friend and host, Dr. Watson. I'm sure he's waiting for us in his study, so let's join him there, shall we?
Ah, there you are, Mr. Bell. And how are you this evening, my boy?
Just fine, thanks, Dr. Watson. And yourself?
Well, 22 of gout, but otherwise I'm doing pretty well for an old gentleman of... You won't go into the question of my age. Draw up a chair and I'll get on with tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure.
From the hints you gave us last week, it sounded like quite a story.
It was one that I shall never forget at any rate. For once, I played a rather... a rather dashing role in the case.
Oh.
And I have this small gold key on my watch chain to remind me of the fact.
A gold key? Given to you perhaps by a lady, Dr. Watson?
It was given me, my boy, by Her Grace, the Dowager Duchess of Penfield.
In gratitude for services rendered, I suppose.
Oh, no, Mr. Bell. Not by the wildest stretch of the imagination could you say that. Let's say that it's a memento of one of the most unusual experiences that the great Sherlock Holmes and I ever had. I call it The Adventure of the Elusive Emerald.
Sounds intriguing, Dr. Watson. Now, Dr. Watson, how's about The Adventure of the Elusive Emerald?
Well, Mr. Bell, the story began on a cold winter evening. Well, no, it wasn't actually. It was in the morning, more years ago than I care to remember. Holmes and I, our breakfast just concluded, sat on either side of a cheery fire in our Baker Street lodgings. A thick fog rolled down between the houses, and the windows opposite looked like dark, shapeless blurs through the heavy yellow murk.
A London pea super, eh, Dr. Watson?
Yes, it was, Mr. Bell. Our gas was lit and shone its flickering light on the white cloth and glimmer of china, for the breakfast table had not yet been cleared. Shortly before 11, we heard the old familiar jangle at our front doorbell, and a few minutes later, Mrs. Hudson ushered into our room Lord Maurice Danby, a middle-aged man who seemed to be in a state of great excitement.
Mr. Holmes, you must help me.
I'll do my best, Lord Danby. What's your problem?
Well... and this is hard to say, gentlemen. It's connected with my mother, the Duchess of Penfield.
Oh, so you're the Duchess of Penfield, son. That's a charming woman. I met her at a house party at the Smythe Parkinson's in Shropshire a few years ago. At the time, she was kind enough to
Watson,
tell me...
Watson, don't you
was...
think your reminiscences might be more appropriate at some other time?
Well, I was only pointing out, Holmes, that you...
Pray continue, Lord Danby.
Well, here's the problem in a nutshell. My brother, the present Duke, is with his regiment in India. During his absence, all the responsibilities of the Penfield family have fallen on my unhappy shoulders. For a year now, I've been driven nearly insane by my nephew, Hilary. The boy's 18, and his madcap escapades have caused me many a sleepless night. But now comes the crowning blow. My mother, my own mother, has turned thief.
Dowager Duchess of Penfield, a thief? Oh, come, sir, you must be mistaken.
Would I make such a shocking statement, Doctor, unless I was sure? I repeat, she's a shoplifter, a pickpocket, a disgrace to our family.
Since monetary considerations are surely not involved, I can only assume that Her Grace is a victim of that unfortunate affliction known as kleptomania.
She is, Mr. Holmes. But how can I explain that to shopkeepers, to friends of the family, when Mother decides to pocket some valuable memento of a weekend house party? And though it's petty thefts today, tomorrow it may develop into more serious criminality. Mr. Holmes, you must help me find some way out of this intolerable situation. I'll pay you any fee you name if
what
you can find...
Don't argue with me.
What on earth's the commotion downstairs?
Well, I see what's wrong, Holmes.
Go back to your kitchen. Mind your own business, you stupid woman.
It's Mother. She must have followed me.
Oh, Grace, how delightful to see you again.
Again? Who are you?
Well, don't you remember? We met at the Smythe Parkinson's a few years ago.
Never saw you before in all my life.
Oh, it was in Shropshire. Fancied us poor, you know.
Rubbish, rubbish. What? Get out of my way. Morris.
Yes, Mama?
Get out of here at once. This is a matter for your elders. Do you hear me?
Mama.
Get out, you oaf.
Yes, Mama.
And when you get home, wait in the blue room for me. I shall attend to you later.
Yes, Mama.
Your Grace, I suggest that...
Keep your suggestions to yourself, young man.
Well, really, I do feel...
And you'll be quiet, too.
Well, I beg your pardon, Duchess. I was only good.
Can't understand a word you say.
Oh, really?
No. Now then, which one of you is Sherlock Holmes?
I am, and
I... Why did that idiot son of mine come to see you?
I fear that professional ethics prevent me
professional
from...
Professional fiddlesticks. You don't need to hem and haw with me. I suppose Morris told you that I was a kleptomaniac.
I'm afraid that I
Nothing
can't...
to be afraid of. Either of you care for a pinch of snuff?
No,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Can't understand anyone who doesn't appreciate snuff. That's much better now. Now then, listen to me, both of you. This story that my son undoubtedly told you about my being a kleptomaniac is an unadulterated lie. It's all part of my children's plot to get hold of my money. They're always after me for that, especially that grandson of mine. And I'm sure he's inveigled my son Morris into his scheme, and now they're planning to have me declared incompetent.
Oh, gracious me, what a shocking...
I don't need any comments. Just listen to me.
Oh, sorry?
No. How much did Morris offer you as a retainer, Mr. Holmes?
I'm afraid I'm not at liberty to say
I'll
anything...
I'll double the fee and trouble you both to hear no more of this. That's all. Who date you?
I'll see you downstairs, your Grace.
You needn't bother. I may be your grandmother, but I can still walk up and downstairs by myself, thank you.
Oh, Holmes, what a magnificent woman.
Yes, quite remarkable, isn't she?
I think she didn't remember meeting me at the Smythe Parkinson's, though.
Quite.
Luckily, we weren't taken in by the son's story, wasn't it, Holmes?
I'm not sure. Watson, you recall that jeweled snuff box I received from this morning's post? It was a token from the King of Morania.
Yes, you put it on the mantelpiece. Good Lord. It's vanished.
Precisely. The Dowager Duchess of Penfield is so brilliant a kleptomaniac that she has achieved an unnoticed theft at 221B Baker Street.
Well, of all the amazing nerve.
Watson, we've met a worthy antagonist. Come on, old chap. Grab your hat and coat. I think we'll take the liberty of providing the Duchess with an unobtrusive escort.
This is the 12th shop that we've been in. My feet are tired. We've been following the Duchess all day.
I was anxious to observe her technique.
Well, she's obviously had plenty of practice.
Yes. She's spent about £100 in this shopping tour so far. And yet she's succeeded in obtaining some £500 worth of goods. Brilliant work.
Look, 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 Holmes. That small man in the bowler hat stopping her.
The shop detective, no doubt. Come on, Watson.
I'm sorry, ma'am, but there it is.
What utter balderdash are you talking?
I must ask you to come and see the manager.
Can I be of any assistance, Your Grace?
It's Holmes and his friends. Yes, yes, you can tell this idiot to stop bothering me.
Well, what seems to be the matter?
I saw this here lady pick up a silver matchbox and slip it into her handbag.
Fiddlesticks. I examined it, yes. But if it's missing, this man was standing near me. Search him.
Search Holmes? But that's ridiculous.
Of course it is. Ma'am, I must ask
I am the Dowager Duchess of Penfield. Now search this man.
Yes, Your Grace.
Insufferable insolence.
Your Grace, I must ask you...
No, you don't. You stand here. I'm going to search you.
This is ridiculous, my good man.
Of course it is.
If you didn't take it, you got nothing to be frightened about, then. Hello, hello. What's this in your coat pocket?
Great Scott, Holmes. It's a silver matchbox.
Oh, quite.
Come on, mister. You've got to explain this to the manager.
Mr. Holmes, I'm very embarrassed that my man brought you here.
That's quite all right, sir. It was a perfectly understandable mistake.
Yes, but you must realize that this unfortunate habit of the Duchess's must be kept a secret.
Quite so, Dr. Watson.
And I think the program I've outlined will prove a most satisfactory way of handling any such incidents in the future. You follow my plan quite clearly?
Oh, yes, Mr. Holmes. We'll have our shop detectives watching her whenever she comes in. Anything she doesn't pay for, we're to charge to her account as though they were purchases.
Precisely. In that way, your shop will sustain no loss, and the Penfield family will be spared public scandal. Yes, a very satisfactory arrangement, I think. Come on, Watson.
Yes,
Mr. Holmes, a very satisfactory arrangement.
Don't you agree, Hillary?
Yes, Uncle. I suppose if we can't stop Granny pinching the stuff, at least this will keep it quiet.
Hillary!
All that remains to be done, Lord Danby, is to make similar arrangements at the other shops your mother patronizes.
And in that way, sir, all scandal can be avoided.
Yes, yes, it's an excellent plan, excellent.
I only wish that since Granny's so free and easy with other people's stuff, she'd loosen up the money bags for me a little. I'm stony broke.
We won't go into that now, Hillary. Come along, my boy. I know Mr. Holmes is a busy man. Good day, gentlemen.
Good day.
Good day. With you, Mr.
Very well, Lord Danby.
Well, I suppose that's the last we'll hear of the Duchess's problem.
I think not, Watson.
Huh?
Just before Lord Danby arrived, I was studying the social section of today's Times. Look at the item I ringed in blue pencil.
The distinguished Polish nobleman, Count Stephen von Kratzoff, is holding a reception at his Grosvenor Square house tomorrow afternoon, at which time the famous Kratzoff emerald will be displayed.
Skim through the list of guests, Watson. I think one name will interest you.
Colonel and Mrs. Martin, Lord and Lady Norvick. By George, the Dowager Duchess of Penfield.
Exactly. And the combination of the finest emerald in Europe and the Duchess of Penfield means that this is one reception we must not miss.
He's over there talking to Count Kratzoff, Your Grace.
You and your friend have been following her since yesterday, haven't you, young man?
Oh, no, of course not. We wouldn't dream of such a thing.
Fiddlesticks. I know you have. When we had met, by the way, you said we'd met before somewhere. Where was it?
At the Smythe Parkinson's in Shropshire. Had a fancy dress done.
Oh, you're the Parkinson's. Don't remember you.
I was wearing a Pierrot's costume.
Oh, really? How very original. What was I wearing?
Something in blue. Blue velvet. It was. You had a white wig, I remember. You looked enchanting.
It wasn't a wig. It was my own hair.
Who was that?
My own housewife. And it wasn't velvet, it was tulle. And the dress was red, not blue. However, I'm flattered that you remembered me. Good night, young man.
Good night, Duchess.
Oh, good night, Count von Kratzoff. Had a very pleasant evening.
Good night, my dear Duchess. I'm so happy that you honored me with your presence.
Oh? How long, Hilda?
Oh, yes,
Granny. Good night,
Granny.
Mr. Holmes.
Good night, Your Grace.
Well, thank you so much, Count.
Good night, young man.
Good night.
A most successful evening, Count von Kratzoff.
I am flattered that so many distinguished guests were present, Dr. Watson. You were very quiet this evening, Mr. Holmes.
I was watching, Count. My eyes hardly left the emerald during the entire evening.
I imagine that you had some professional reason for attending. The embassy was most insistent that I invite you. But nothing seems to have happened. Is the gem still lying in its case on the table there?
I saw nothing happen. I hope nothing did.
Well, what could have happened? There's a stone safe and sound.
Now, please examine it, Mr. Holmes. I know you have quite a reputation as an expert on druids.
What a beautiful gem.
It is considered one of the finest in Europe, my dear doctor. Mr. Holmes, what is your opinion?
That you've been robbed, Count von Kratzoff.
Robbed?
Yes, this is an extremely fine paste replica. The Kratzoff emerald has been stolen right under my very eyes.
And now, Act Two of the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
So, Dr. Watson, the famous emerald had been replaced by a paste replica?
Yes, my boy, it had.
Well, I don't have to be a Sherlock Holmes to deduce that the Dowager Duchess was the culprit.
Elementary, my dear Mr. Bell, elementary. But when the police arrived on the scene, Holmes gave no indication of our obvious suspicion. Later on, when we returned to Baker Street, I don't think either of us were in the least bit surprised to find that Lord Danby was waiting for us in a state of great agitation.
Mr. Holmes, you've helped me so far. You've got to find some way out of this mess.
You've spoken to Count von Kratzoff since the loss was discovered?
Yes. He came over to see me while you and the police were still searching the house. We're neighbors, you know.
What did he say, sir?
That for the sum of £20,000, he'd agree to keep the whole matter quiet.
Indeed. And why should Count von Kratzoff assume that your mother was responsible for the theft?
I'm afraid he must have heard rumors of her unfortunate habits.
Do you propose to make the settlement, Lord Danby?
The estate can't afford it, Doctor. Oh, dear me, what will my brother the Duke say when he returns from India? What am I to do, Mr. Holmes?
Your problem has many more ramifications than I imagined when you first called on me, Lord Danby. I think if you'll allow me a few hours' grace, I can give you a surprisingly satisfactory solution to your dilemma.
I'll be eternally grateful if you can.
Well, how do you propose to do it, Holmes?
The first step is obvious. To find the jeweler who made the paste replica. Unless I'm much mistaken, there's only one jeweler in London capable of such an exquisite piece of craftsmanship. We shall call on him, Watson. We shall call on him at once.
Yes, Mr. Holmes, I made this replica.
I thought you were the only man in London capable of such brilliant work, Mr. Marcus.
You are most kind. It was one of a pair of duplicates that were ordered.
A pair, eh?
Yes.
Now the plot thickens, Watson.
Of course, you had no idea that the replicas were ordered with any criminal intent, Mr. Marcus.
Of course not, Dr. Watson. I was told that they were for a collection of replicas of famous stones, and I was paid handsomely, 25 guineas apiece for them, yes.
A small stake for so large a prize.
Could you describe the woman who gave you the order?
Woman, Doctor? It was a man, a young man.
A man? But, yes. Holmes, she must have an accomplice.
I think not, Watson. Though the train of thought suggested is certainly an astonishing one. However, our next move should be obvious.
Oh? What's that?
We return to Baker Street for certain necessary tools of my trade. And then, my dear fellow, we pay an unannounced visit to the Dowager Duchess and try our hands at a little burglary.
Holmes, is that you?
Yes, Watson. I hope you're not too cold.
Oh, I'm frozen to death. Cowering here in these bushes under the Duchess's window. You must have been gone for 3/4 of an hour at least.
Nevertheless, it was a very profitable excursion.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it. For heaven's sake, take off that stupid moustache. You look ridiculous.
And yet this stupid moustache inspired great confidence in the second chambermaid. Under the impression that I was a flirtatious plumber with prospects, she informed me that the Duchess has a small room leading off the boudoir, a room that none of the staff is allowed to enter.
You think that that's where her hoard of stolen goods may be situated?
And it's worth trying, old chap. A stout coil of rope attached to the balcony above should enable us to make an unobtrusive entry.
Impossible, but where do we find a stout coil of rope?
Even a pseudo-plumber has his tools. You don't imagine this bag contains a pipe wrench or some such useless appurtenance, do you? Look.
Great Scott. A coil of rope.
Exactly. Now let's see how best we may secure it to the balcony above. But we must work quietly, Watson. If we are discovered, I'm afraid this is going to be a trifle hard to explain.
Up ropes, Holmes, I realize I'm not as young as I used to be.
I thought you were surprisingly nimble, my dear Watson.
Oh, I don't like this. Supposing somebody discovers us burgling the Duchess's house and calls the police. Then what?
We shall probably go to prison. Strike a match, will you?
Right. But I still don't like it.
I like this lamp. There we are.
So this is the room where the servants are not allowed, eh?
Now, I wonder where the Duchess would, I think this wall safe gives us the answer.
Locked, of course.
Yes, but the safe's old-fashioned. Unless I'm much mistaken, the combination is an extremely simple one. It is. There we are. Look, Watson. This is Pandora's box indeed.
Great. It's got a whole collection of silver and jewelry.
And prominent among it is the King of Morania's jeweled snuff box. I'll slip that in my pocket. I think His Majesty would prefer that I retain this ownership.
Look, Holmes. There's Count von Kratzoff's emerald.
Yes, Watson. We'll take charge of that, too. The rest of this collection doesn't concern us.
I think there's someone in the other room.
Quick. Down the rope. Give me a hand off this window ledge.
Who's in there?
Oh, hurry home, Mr. Duchess.
Follow me as fast as you can.
Who is it? Oh. Who is it? Why, my word. Why, such young Dr. Watson.
That's right, young Dr. Watson.
How on earth did you get here?
I got here through the window.
Through the window? Well, imagine that.
I climbed up a rope to your balcony, Your Grace.
You climbed up a rope? Well, dear boy, you took that risk from me. Oh, you impetuous boy.
Who, me? Oh, no, Your Grace. Not a word,
my dear boy. I know how you feel.
Oh, I'm sorry,
I realized it tonight when you spoke of the gray chiffon dress I wore at Smythe Parkinson's
ball.
But you don't understand.
I understand only too well. Oh, but you dear, dear boy, it can't be. Don't you understand? Think of my family, my grandchildren, my reputation.
But really, Your Grace, you're making a very...
Not another word, you headstrong boy. Now, one kiss and good night.
Your Grace.
My dear boy, now you must go.
Yes, I certainly must. Good night.
Good night, you foolish boy.
Scott, Holmes will be furious. Holmes!
Watson, what happened?
Holmes, she thought I was there to see her.
Hope springs eternally. I trust you didn't undeceive her.
No, but she kissed me, Holmes.
A martyr to our cause, Watson. Well, it's been a most successful evening. The case is solved, and I imagine it's still quite early. What time is it?
Well, it's... Holmes.
What's wrong?
Great Scott, when the Duchess kissed me, she stole my watch.
You say the case is solved, Mr. Holmes?
Yes, Lord Danby. That's why I asked you and Count von Kratzoff and your nephew to join me here in Baker Street.
Where is my emerald?
There it is, Count von Kratzoff.
How did you make the old girl give it back? I bet it made her furious.
Supposing you let my friend explain in his own good time, young man.
Here is the replica, Count, and here's the real emerald. You will, of course, identify the stone.
Yes, of course.
Splendid. Then I'm sure you have no objection to signing this document I prepared. It relieves the Duchess's family of all responsibility. Please sign it here.
Very well, Mr. Holmes. There.
Thank you, Count. And now, Lord Danby, I shall present this paper to you.
I'm tremendously grateful, Mr. Holmes, but I'm utterly confused.
Then let me clarify the situation for you. I have another visitor here tonight. Please come in, won't you?
Very well, Mr. Holmes.
Lord, it's that jeweler fuller.
Now, Mr. Marcus, please point out the person who ordered the two-paste replicas from you.
It was that young man there.
Me? But I've never seen you before in my life.
He was the man, Mr. Holmes.
You mean that my...
I mean, Lord Danby, that the whole theft was part of an extremely cunning plot. Count von Kratzoff, you joined forces with young Hilary here. You displayed a paste replica at your reception and tempted the Duchess to seal it.
Which she did, and then the Count substituted the second replica in place of the one that she'd taken.
Precisely, and insisted that I examine the stone, knowing that I'd spot it was a fake. And then Count von Kratzoff attempted to persuade the family to settle for £20,000.
For the theft of a paste imitation?
Well, Count, it looks as though Sherlock Holmes was too smart for us.
Be a fool, Hilary. Admit nothing.
A confession is not needed, since the guilt is proven.
But where's the real emerald?
I'm quite certain it's still safe in Poland. The whole plot was perfectly clear to me when Mr. Marcus told me of the pair of duplicates.
Yes, a kleptomaniac could hardly indulge in such an elaborate plan.
Nor would one work with an accomplice. Well, Lord Andy, what do you say?
But I'm shocked. Deeply shocked. My nephew I shall deal with separately, of course. Don't look so grumpy, Uncle. I was only trying to get a little money. Granny wouldn't give me any.
Count von Kratzoff, you can be prosecuted for fraud and extortion, you know.
Only by involving the Penfield family in a great deal of scandal, I assure you, Mr. Holmes.
What do you say, Lord Danby? Do you intend to prosecute?
The Count's right. The scandal would be unbearable.
Then I'd suggest we merely request Count von Kratzoff's immediate departure for Poland.
Now, don't try and stop me, my good woman. I'm here upstairs.
It's Mother.
It's Granny.
It's the Duchess. Oh, Lord.
My word. How very depressing. I came here to talk to Dr. Watson, and I find his room knee-deep with my relatives. Now get out of this room, all of you.
But, Mama...
Now, no arguments, Wallace. Leave the room. All of you, and wait for me downstairs.
Very well, come on. Come along to the room. I will speak to you privately.
Mr. Holmes, I want to speak to Dr. Watson alone.
Very well, Your Grace.
Holmes, don't leave me.
Well, that's extremely ungallant of you, Doctor.
Your Grace, you can speak freely, perfectly freely, in front of Mr. Holmes here.
Oh, my word. How extremely disappointing. Well, young man, I realize that I was cruel and heartless to you last night. Here, here's your watch. Oh,
thank you, Your Grace. What's this gold key on the chain?
That's a key to my private conservatory in the garden.
Oh, dear me.
Yes, a man of your weight has no business climbing ropes. Good day, Mr. Holmes.
Goodbye, Your Grace.
And Dr. Watson.
Yes, Your Grace.
I looked through my wardrobe after you left last night. I found that dress I wore at the Smythe Parkinson's. It was green. Bottle green net.
Watson, my dear fellow, you've made a conquest. A distinct conquest.
I felt so more embarrassed in my life. A gold key, indeed. You know, Holmes, though the case is over, I think Count von Kratzoff should be taught a lesson. Undoubtedly, he led that young fellow astray, even though Lord Danby doesn't want to prosecute. I'm not sure that we shouldn't.
What evidence would we use?
Rebecca Emerald, of course.
You seem to forget that the Dowager Duchess of Penfield has just left the room.
What? You mean she's told it again?
Yes, Watson. I'm sure that our evidence will shortly be reposing in that small room off her boudoir. And I have a strong feeling that not even your love for British justice will get you there again.
Tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Mudgrave Ritual. Nigel Bruce appeared by permission of California Pictures. Tom Conway through the courtesy of Eagle Lion Pictures. This is Joseph Bell speaking for Kremel Hair Tonic and Kremel Shampoo and inviting you to be with us next week at this same time when Dr. Watson will tell us about the adventure of the Grand Old Man. Tonic and Kremel Shampoo present the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson and Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes. Well, once again, it's time to keep that weekly date with our good friend and host, Dr. Watson. Let's join him, shall we?
Come in, Mr. Bell.
Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, my boy.
How are you feeling after your Christmas holiday?
Remarkably well, thank you, Mr. Bell, considering how extremely hospitable my friends have been. Just a twinge or two of gout to remind me that an old man should treat tawny port with the respect that it deserves.
I know just what you mean, Dr. Watson.
Draw up your usual chair, my boy, and settle yourself down. That's it.
All ready with tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure, Dr. Watson?
Yes, Mr. Bell. And when I was going over my notes on the case just before you arrived, I came across this white feather. It played a prominent part in tonight's adventure.
A white feather? That signifies cowardice, doesn't it?
Yes, it can, Mr. Bell, it can. But this is a very special feather. It was plucked from a white cockerel, and it helped Sherlock Holmes to foil one of the most diabolical plots that we ever encountered.
Now, Dr. Watson, how about the story of the white cockerel?
Well, Mr. Bell, that adventure took place after Sherlock Holmes had given up his regular practice and retired to his bee farm on the Sussex Downs. I was staying with him there for a few weeks' holiday, and I remember coming down to breakfast one morning to find my old friend, his pipe clenched between his teeth, squatting on a stool, examining the contents of a large metal box at his feet. As he threw back the lid, I could see that the box was half full of papers. Papers tied up with red tape in separate packages. After sorting through them for a few moments, he turned to me and said,
"A box of secrets, my dear Watson. A box of deep, dark secrets."
Are they the records of your early cases, Holmes?
Yes, my boy. These were all done before my biographer had come to glorify me.
I've often wished that I had the notes on them.
So that you might transmute my little adventures into those rather florid stories of yours?
My stories aren't florid. They're factual accounts of what happened.
Don't be hurt, my dear
fellow.
It's much too early in the day. Well, Watson, perhaps someday the world will hear of these cases. They're not all successes, but there are some pretty little problems among them.
I'm sure there are.
For example, here's the record of the Tarleton murders. And here's the case of Bambury, the wine merchant.
What happened to him?
He died, Watson, under peculiarly horrible circumstances.
Oh, really?
That case was one of my failures, I'm afraid. Aha! This adventure was really a little recherché. It's a full account of Ricoletti of the Clubfoot and his abominable wife.
Yes, I vaguely remember her, dreadful woman.
Ghosts from the past, Watson. Ghosts to remind me that my heyday's long past.
Rubbish. I'm quite sure that if a case were to present itself at this moment, you'd be totally unable to resist it.
You're wrong, old chap. Look at this note. It arrived just before you came downstairs. Mr. Manderby, the local squire, apparently needs my help. And yet I assure you I'm not in the least tempted to give it to him.
May I see it?
Certainly. Yeah.
So look. Dear Mr. Sherlock Holmes, I need your help desperately. Have the goodness to call on me as soon as convenience permits. Continued theft of chickens may appear to be a small matter. Chickens, good gracious me. But I assure you that there are sinister forces at work. Asking you to catch a chicken thief. Well, really, Holmes.
Yes, Watson, chickens. Something of a come-down, isn't it?
Well, do you know this, Mr. Manderby?
No. But surely his handwriting gives you a clue to his character.
Well, it's legible and regular. A man of business habits, I should say, and of some force of character.
No, no, Watson.
Oh, sorry?
Look at his long letters. They hardly rise above the common herd. That D might be an A, and the L an E. Men of character always differentiate their long letters, however illegibly they may write. There's vacillation in his K's and self-esteem in his capitals.
That's amazing, Holmes.
Elementary, my dear Watson. And our long association together should remind you of the fact. I'm afraid you're getting rusty.
Well, perhaps you're getting rusty too, Holmes. And since the sun is shining, and this letter comes from a neighbor of yours, it might be rather interesting to...
Call on Mr. Manderby.
Exactly. I'd like to see if your analysis of his character matches the gentleman himself. In any case, Holmes, he may really be in trouble, you know.
Watson, you're like an old war horse hearing a nearly forgotten bugle.
Yeah, I dare say, Holmes. But even for stolen chickens, it's good to be in harness with you again.
When that wistful tone creeps into your voice, I can't refuse you, Watson. Very well. Let's stroll across the downs and investigate the mystery of Mr. Manderby's chickens.
Mr. Holmes, I'm glad you and your friend came here so promptly.
It would seem to me, Mr. Manderby, that your wisest course would have been to call in the local police.
I did. And the idiots scoffed at me.
Indeed, Mr. Manderby, why?
Well, they said if they had to track down all the chicken thieves in these parts, they'd have no time for their more important duties.
I must admit that I can follow their reasoning, sir.
Well, I can't, since they seem to spend most of their time playing skittles in the Star and Garter. The local sergeant appears to have been selected for his complete lack of grey matter. Isn't one iota of imagination. He's unable to see in what respect this differs from an ordinary chicken theft.
Well, in what way does it differ, Mr. Manderby?
Well, the chicken coops were broken into with considerable ingenuity. The thief could have taken all he could carry. But he stole only one chicken. A white cockerel.
A white cockerel? When did this take place?
Early last evening. That was when I sent my note to you, Mr. Holmes. But in the early hours of this morning, a burglar broke into the house itself.
And what was stolen this time?
Again, the thief took only one object. My daughter's hairbrush.
Does your daughter know of these thefts?
No, no, I didn't tell her. The child's full enough of peculiar fancies as it is.
A white cockerel and a hairbrush. Mr. Manderby, I came here against my better judgment, but thank heaven I did. Please let me talk to your daughter at once. Unless I'm very much mistaken, there's devil's work afoot.
Alicia's playing in the drawing room. I'll take you in.
I think if you don't mind, Mr. Manderby, that we would prefer to see her alone.
Rubbish. What could you possibly wish to say to my daughter that you couldn't say in front of me?
Well, since my friend has been kind enough to help you, sir, I think you'd better let him conduct his investigation in his own manner.
Oh, very, very, very well. All sounds unnecessarily mysterious to me. I'll be in my study.
Dreadfully pompous fellow. You were right in your analysis of his character, Holmes. Well, let's go in.
Shh. Listen to the piano, Watson.
What a weird tune.
Yes. An odd, primitive melody to hear in the heart of the English countryside. Very curious.
Come in. I'm sorry, Father. Oh, it isn't Father. Who are you, gentlemen?
Miss Manderby. Permit me to introduce myself. My name is Sherlock Holmes, and this is my friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, my dear?
Mr. Sherlock Holmes, I knew you lived in the neighborhood, Why are you here?
At your father's request.
Well, nothing's wrong, is it, Mr. Holmes?
I'm not sure, Miss Manderby. That's why we've come to talk to you.
Oh, may we sit down, Mother?
Oh, yes, of course. Please forgive me.
Thank you, sir.
You play the piano excellently, Miss Manderby. Have you ever thought of concert work?
Concert work? Oh, no, sir. Papa'd never allow it. He needs me here all the time.
You don't see many people here at the house.
No, Dr. Watson. Papa doesn't like me to cultivate any friends. He wishes me to devote all my attention to him.
Extremely selfish and medieval point of view, it would seem to me.
Oh, please, Mr. Holmes, you mustn't say anything against Papa. If he knew that we were talking about him, he'd be furious.
Then let me confine myself to you, Miss Manderby. Do you know of anyone in this neighborhood who might wish you serious harm?
No. No, I don't. As I told you, I hardly know anyone.
Then why, my dear young lady, are you so obviously terrified of your own shadow?
Oh, please don't ask me that. I haven't even had the courage to tell Papa.
Possibly not, my dear, but Mr. Holmes is here to help you and to protect you. That's why he insisted on our seeing you alone.
Yes, Miss Manderby. And a trouble shared, you know?
Very well, Mr. Holmes. I will tell you. I've got to tell someone. Last night I had a ghastly dream. I dreamed that I was in some foreign country, in the jungle. I was tied to a stone slab, and a group of natives danced around me, waving knives. And they were all wearing terrifying masks.
Oh, my dear, it sounds like too much lobster for supper.
Quiet, Watson.
Oh, sorry.
Please continue, Miss Manderby.
All the time I could hear a strange, haunting pipe playing in the background. It sounded like some sort of flute, and it was a drum beating out a slow, rhythmic beat.
The same rhythm that you were playing on the piano as we came in?
Why, yes. It's been haunting me ever since I awakened this morning. It goes like this. Suddenly, Mr. Holmes, I awakened from the nightmare. But I could still hear the melody continuing. I went to the window, and in the moonlight, I saw a tall man walking below.
Could you recognize him?
No, Mr. Holmes. He was disappearing through the shrubbery, and his back was turned. But his hands were raised to his mouth. And I could hear the same melody being played on some kind of flute. It was awful, awful.
You haven't told your father about it?
No, Dr. Watson. He wouldn't have believed me. Papa's always accusing me of being fanciful. Oh, but I'm not. Really, I'm not.
Miss Manderby, I'm glad that you've told us this. Though I suggest that you continue to keep the incident a secret from your father.
Very well, Mr. Holmes.
Come on, Watson.
All right, Holmes. Goodbye, my dear. And courage, Miss Manderby. You have friends now.
Good day, gentlemen. And thank you.
Holmes. What the devil's all this about?
When I can answer that question, Watson, the case will be solved. As it is, there's work to be done.
Ah, there you are, Holmes.
Yes, Mr. Manderby. Here we are.
Yeah, I hope you find out what's wrong with the lassie. She hasn't been herself today.
A change from her normal self, where you are concerned, might be a benefit, sir.
Yes, indeed. The poor girl seems completely terrified of you, sir.
The problem of my daughter's relationship with her father is no possible concern of yours. I asked you here on a simple matter of detection.
Detection, yes, but far from simple. I warn you, you're in serious danger of the loss of a great deal more than a white cockerel and a hairbrush. Be on your guard, Mr. Manderby. Dr. Watson and I must conduct a little investigation in the village. You may expect a call from us later in the day. Watson, here we are at the Larches.
Charming house, but I still don't see quite why we are here.
Because my inquiries uncovered the fact that this is the only house in the neighborhood with relatively new tenants. When something extraordinary happens in the peaceful countryside, look first for a newcomer. The owner's name is Mr. George Shapley. Let's see what information the gentleman can give us.
Listen to that, Holmes. Sounds like a flute.
Yes, Watson. And the melody is the same that Miss Manderby played for us on the piano.
And this house is only a stone's throw away from hers.
Precisely.
Yes, gentlemen.
Mr. Chaplin?
Yes?
My name is Holmes, and this is my friend, Dr. Watson.
How do you do, sir? How are you, Doctor? What can I do for you, gentlemen?
I'm something of a student of music. We were walking past your house, and I heard what sounded like a flute playing a strange melody.
It seemed to come from the direction of the stables over there.
Oh, that. It's my manservant, Harker. He's a West Indian. Brought him over with me from Trinidad. He's quite a musician, in an amateur sort of way, you know?
I wonder if I might speak to him.
Of course you can, Mr. Holmes. I'll walk you over there.
Thank you. We were thinking of getting up a little entertainment in the village for the church ladies' bazaar. Perhaps your man would consider contributing his services.
You can ask him. He spends 2 or 3 hours a day out here practicing. Parker!
Yes?
Come here a minute.
Yes, Mr. Chaplin.
These gentlemen heard you playing and wondered if you'd like to do something for some village concert or other.
Oh, that's flattering.
We're organizing a musical soiree for the church ladies in a few weeks.
Yes, my man, and we'd like you to play for us.
Oh, I'm only an amateur, but I'll be very glad to help, gentlemen.
That instrument you were playing, it had an odd quality. Was it a flute?
Yes, sir. Though I doubt if you've ever seen one like it. Look for yourself.
Good Lord. Looks as if it's made of bone.
It is, sir. From a human leg bone.
Really?
It's about 200 years old and originally came from Brazil. It's quite a collector's item.
I'm sure it is. Tell me, Harker, since you're from the West Indies and obviously a lover of music, I presume you're familiar with some of the primitive melodies indigenous to that part of the world? Some of the tribal chants, for instance?
Oh, yes, sir. I know many of them.
Perhaps you'd play some at the concert.
I'd rather not, sir. Primitive chants are dangerous medicine when their evil powers are not appreciated or understood.
I quite agree with you, Harker. Well, I'm much obliged to you, and we shall count on you for the concert. Good day to you both. Come on, Watson.
Good day. That servant's our man, Holmes. He lives within 2 houses of Miss Manderby, and he plays the flute.
Well, Watson, though I don't think the pattern is remotely as clear as you think, I'll agree that suspicion would seem to focus on the servant, Harker. I could even produce another clue that points to him.
You could?
I picked this object from his coat as he turned to you during the conversation. None of you noticed it.
What is it?
Look for yourself, Watson. Here.
Great heavens! It's a feather from a white cockerel. Holmes, I thought you said we were going back to Mr. Manderby's house before the day's over.
We are, Watson.
Why are we back here at your bee farm? It's 8:30 in the evening now.
We shall call on Mr. Manderby before long. My investigations are complete. What luck did you have with yours?
Well, as you told me, I made exhaustive inquiries in the village.
With what results?
I couldn't find out much about Mr. Shapley. Nobody knows anything about the man except that he has a foreign manservant and that he paid cash for his house and deposited a large sum of money in the local bank. What did you discover? I see that you've been up to your ears in reference books.
Yes, Watson. Books concerning the peculiarly revolting ceremonies connected with voodooism.
Voodooism? That's black magic.
But flourishing in our English countryside, apparently. A white cockerel is the second finest sacrifice in voodoo magic associated with the West Indian tribe.
That accounts for the first theft. How about the stolen hairbrush?
In all such magic, the possession of intensely personal objects, particularly human hair, is considered to give great supernatural powers over that person.
Then it's obvious that West Indian servant is trying to get power over Miss Manderby. Holmes, you spoke of a white cockerel being the second finest sacrifice. What is the first?
A human sacrifice. The sacrifice of a young girl.
Great Scott!
And tomorrow night the moon is full. I think that tonight the girl should be safe, though of course we'll go over there at
once. Look, Holmes, the lights of a carriage are coming up your driveway.
And it's no social call. It's driving at a gallop. Come on, Watson.
I have nothing that's happened to Miss Manderby already before we get her.
Who is it? What's wrong?
It's Robert Manderby.
What's happened, Mr. Manderby?
Alicia, my daughter, she's disappeared. The whole neighborhood's searching for her. For heaven's sake, both of you come at once.
And now, Act 2 of the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Dr. Watson, what happened next? You and the great Sherlock Holmes drove over to Mr. Manderby's house, I suppose.
Yes, Mr. Bell, as fast as a pony and trap could carry us, sir. When we arrived, Manderby quickly led us to the shrubbery beneath his daughter's window.
Yes, you can see how the fiend got into the house, Mr. Holmes.
By climbing this trellis work. Footprints in the earth leading toward it, but none leaving.
And the man, whoever he was, must have left the house by some other exit.
An amazing deduction, Watson.
There's no need to be sarcastic. Holmes, we should go to Shafter's house at once. It's obvious that that's where the danger lies.
Before saying that anything is obvious, Watson, I'd like your help in trying an experiment.
Yes, of course, Holmes. Well, what is it?
Try climbing that trellis for me, will you?
You'll give me all the best jobs, don't you? Let me hand, will you, Ogle?
Here you are. Up you go.
You know, Holmes, it seems to me you're wasting valuable time.
Mr. Manderby, since you asked my help, I suggest you let me handle the case in my own way.
Holmes, I don't think this trellis is going to hold my weight. No, no. Look out, Holmes! Oh, oh!
Bravo, Watson. Your test has been invaluable.
What do you mean it's been invaluable? I think I've broken my back.
I'm sure you'll survive. Come on, old chap. Get on your feet. We'll go to Mr. Shapley's house at once. I only hope we're not too late to prevent a tragedy.
The light coming from the stables, Holmes.
Music, too. Listen.
It's that West Indian playing his devilish chant again.
Faster, Watson.
Look, look, look. There's someone standing in the shadows by the harness room there.
Mr. Shapley. Good evening, sir.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, thank heavens you're here.
What's wrong, Mr. Shapley?
Look in that empty store there. You can see through the broken plank in the wall. The one where the music's coming from. Good heavens. Look, Holmes. There's Miss Manderby lying on the floor unconscious.
Yes, with a dead white cockerel beside her and a fire smoldering in the corner.
And you think that servant of mine's in there playing his filthy music?
I don't see him.
Mr. Holmes, I've got a revolver. I'm going into getting.
I think we'll come with you, Mr. Shapley.
No, look. My servant. I'll take care of you myself.
Archie Watson. Give me that revolver. Give it to me, I say.
What do you think you're doing, Mr.
Yes,
Holmes?
Tell you, I've knocked the revolver right out of his hand.
Pick it up, Watson. I have a profound dislike for seeing murder committed under my very eyes.
Murder? But the potential murder is Harker, the servant.
Indeed. Then why is his unconscious body lying in the corner there?
It can't be. The music's still playing. That's his flute.
Yes, and it's accompanied by a drum. A remarkable feat, even for a man not lying unconscious on the floor. The music is undoubtedly that of a gramophone. You're remarkably quiet, Mr. Harker.
Well, see, he's unconscious.
My dear Watson, you're overlooking an important fact. It's a case of identity. The West Indian gentleman lying on the floor is the master, Mr. Shapley. This man is the servant, Harker.
No, you don't. I've
got him, Holmes.
Let go of me. You can't prove anything.
I can and I will. You'll go to prison for this night's work. Watson, see what may be done to arrive at the house while I turn this man over to the police. How is Miss Manderby, Watson?
She's going to be all right, Holmes. I took her home to her father's and left instructions for her care. How are you feeling, Shepard?
Fine, thank you, Dr. Watson. But I'm waiting for Mr. Holmes to explain this night's happenings to me.
So am I, as usual.
Then let me analyze this singular affair in its logical progression. I early concluded that you, Mr. Shapley, were the master, and the other man was the servant.
Right, Mr. Holmes, but I didn't know how you knew it.
Your speech and manner suggested nothing else. You reversed roles, I imagine, because it was an easier way to rent a house in the English countryside.
That was the reason, Mr. Holmes. In my previous visits, I've discerned a certain prejudice against foreigners.
That's a shocking thing, but I wouldn't doubt it, Mr. Shapley. You decided to live here for your health, I suppose?
No, Doctor. I came to the English countryside for peace. Peace to conclude my studies on the origin and history of West Indian native music.
I see.
I've been working in close conjunction with Professor Griffiths of the Brighton College of Anthropology. It was he who concerned me to make graphophone records my works with a view to recording them for musical archives.
And your servant saw his advantage. When you decided to change identities, he realized that if he disposed of you, he would be able to continue in his false character as the supposed Mr. Shapley. He could have taken over your large bank balance and retired under yet a third name with the proceeds.
And then he concocted this elaborate plot involving voodoo and native chants, knowing that his master would be suspect.
Precisely. He drugged his master, placed him in the incriminating trap, and then planned to burst in just ahead of us and shoot him.
But Holmes, the white feather you found on Mr. Shapler's coat...
Undoubtedly planted there.
Mr. Holmes, I still don't see how you knew that my man was responsible.
The first clue was the trellis. It's obvious that you never climbed that. You're heavier than Dr. Watson, and it wouldn't support his weight. Your servant was a small, light man. Obviously, it was he.
Well, I see it all now. And then, of course, when we heard the music while Mr. Shapley was still lying unconscious, it was obvious that the whole thing was a plot.
Oh, what a shocking business. Yes, but I can't tell you how grateful I am to you, gentlemen. You saved my life. Mr. Holmes, I must insist on paying you a handsome fee.
A fee? No, Mr. Shapley. I couldn't dream of accepting one. Some people in my country have been sufficiently inhospitable to a foreigner to make him believe it advisable to change places with his own servant. Presumably, this was done in order to obtain tolerance and peace. Surely the least I can do is to see that his stay on these shores is a tolerable one.
Tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Mazarin Stone. Nigel Bruce appeared by permission of California Pictures. Tom Conway through the courtesy of Eagle Lion Pictures. This is Joseph Bell speaking for Kremel Hair Tonic and Kremel Shampoo. And inviting you to be with us next week at this same time.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, copyright 2020 by Timely Audio.